Now, Will, I am going to ask Will to give a little bit of a snapshot of what he shared yesterday, because he outlined an entire member communications journey around COVID and how they approached different aspects of it, vaccinations and everything, and all the different parties that were involved. And I think his presentation was excellent. So, and he was also the one that kicked off this conversation in the discussion forum. So as a way to kickstart the conversation, Will, if I can, just kind of ask you to open it up with a few words and talk about what you all are doing and what kinds of questions came up yesterday and what you feel like this group might benefit the most from in terms of a roundtable discussion. So I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate you helping to organize this. As CCHP is a small regional plan in San Francisco, California. We have about 15,000 members, and we are actively preparing for how to notify and guide our members towards COVID-19 vaccination. We think it's one of the most important things we'll do in the first half of this year and probably beyond. And many of our population is vulnerable. They have language and cultural needs that we're actively working to meet. And we're contending with a very volatile environment, which I assume that's what everyone else on the call is experiencing. So I thought it was a great idea to reach out to other plans as part of the alliance and really see what we can do to share best practices and really talk about the shared experience we all have in trying to contend with vaccine availability, guidance from the federal, state, county, and local level, okay? And really trying to make sense of all this on behalf of our members and the community at large. We just learned today that FEMA will probably be tasked to support vaccination distribution in some manner, okay? Per guidance from the federal level, and that will just add to the mix of stakeholders in the process. So we're excited, we're a little anxious, a little scared, okay, and wanted to make sure that we share our activities. So I thought that putting together that presentation as a start of how we're trying to approach the problem and working with the folks on the call and part of the alliance would be a great way to kind of kick things off. So Jennifer, hopefully that gives you an overview of kind of what we're doing. Anyone that wants to be part of our little informal working group should feel free to contact me directly, and I'll add you to kind of my distribution list, but always feel free to work with amongst yourselves and through the alliance as well.
Thank you so much, Will. And I'll put your email address in the chat box so that people can note that and email you for your work group activity. And thank you for kind of laying the groundwork for where you guys are at CCHP. And at this time, I don't have structure. I do want to open it up for conversation. So many of you did chime in the discussion forum about your interest in talking about member communications around vaccines. And there are no questions are off limits. We really want to just get it all out there. And that will enable us to determine where we need to go to support you. The Alliance is here with our listening ears on, and we want to make sure that we're responsive and that we provide the venues for you to get together and talk. So I'm going to open it up, take your phone off mute, and tell us your name and ask a question, and we'll get started.
This is Siobhan from Community Health Plan of Washington. I'm interested in what people are doing. I mean, I imagine that the landscape in your areas and states is much like ours, where the guidance changes about who's eligible and has changed several times, and distribution may be uncertain. How you are helping prepare your members for vaccination when not sure who might be next or where they could go because things keep changing rapidly. It seems a little hard to plan communications in that environment. And also because we're a Medicaid plan, we have requirements around getting our communications approved.
Cool. This is Yvette Ruiz with Avid Health Plan down in South Florida. So we are a Medicare and commercial plan, and we've been following the guidance that has been set by our state governor, which is coming down from a federal standpoint. We are just broaching the subject on how we're going to be handling this with our membership population. Particularly our Medicare Advantage plan, we've got about 25,000 members enrolled in there. Obviously, not everybody is going to meet the criteria, but we are still following the guidelines that have been set forth where, you know, they have to be frontline workers or 65 and older. Because these are government-funded right now, we are not receiving any claims. And I think one of the questions that we have at hand, which is kind of hindered us from creating a full member communication plan, is not knowing what the next steps are with the new administration that's in play. What the next steps are going to be in terms of, you know, what's going to be the availability of vaccines? Is it going to be distributed at the federal level? Or are they still going to allow the states to run that? So what I was hoping to get out is just to see if everybody in this call is still experiencing that we're kind of like in a holding pattern, really not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring in terms of the vaccine, where we're going to get it, and how we're going to coordinate this. We're going to be treating it like we treat the flu vaccine, where it's going to be preventive with no member cost share, as we do today for flu and some of the other preventive services. But besides that, not quite sure yet how or what we're going to communicate to members until we know a little bit more.
This is Elizabeth with IU Health Plans. I just got a new sound system on my computer, so can you guys hear me okay? Okay, good.
Yes.
I had an eye-opener yesterday because I volunteered to be one of the registration persons at the COVID clinic where they got the vaccinations. And of course, these were mostly older people coming through, a few first responders. But what I found was that the majority of the people who came through that were 70 or older did not have their Medicare card with them. So in the registration process, at least this is how it worked in Indiana, we had to put them in either with their Medicare Advantage or Medicare supplement plan that they had with no Medicare, or we had to put them in as no insurance. So what happens is when they're put in as no insurance, they're paid for through a grant. So it doesn't run through Medicare. If it's run through their insurance, the insurance plan doesn't pay for it, but they're going to have the individual then file the claim with Medicare. So that was kind of an eye-opener for me. And I think it was a lack of communication, because in most of the communications I've seen, they don't tell the people 70 and older to bring their Medicare card with them. So we've added that to our talking points.
That's interesting, because in South Florida, they don't ask you for any of that information. The only reason I know is because my parents went and got the vaccine last week. So I wonder if every state is doing them somewhat different, because I don't believe that there needs to be a claim filed.
Is anyone else on from Indiana? Am I the only one? I have another question while I'm on the line. This morning, I saw a TV announcement from the World Health Organization about a VAX passport, VAX passport. And they gave the website vaccinepassport.com, saying that if people are traveling, they need to show proof that they've had the COVID vaccine. And I can't seem to break through to get information about this. So I don't know if it was just a junk advertisement that I saw, or if this is for real. Does anybody know anything about that?
This is Yvette in Florida again. I have heard the same, that they are going to start requiring that the 26th of January. But I haven't received confirmation of that either.
So this is Greg from Health Alliance Medical Plans. Can everyone hear me? So just a clarification, were you guys folks referring to international travel or continental US or both?
What I saw was did not have a definition of either way. So they just said travel.
So my wife and I had, you know, been looking into travel in the spring. And our understanding was, and this could be wrong or may have been updated, but our understanding was that having the vaccine wouldn't necessarily help you in the sense that you had to be tested before you left and before you came back. And you had to obviously have a negative test. And if you were, say, outside the country, let's say Jamaica, and you tested positive, you would not be able to return to the States until you quarantine. And same thing with leaving. That's what we've been hearing from travel agencies, et cetera. But my hope is that the vaccine would be a similar, you know, the vaccine would work as well as a negative test. But from what I'm hearing, that isn't the case. But maybe you guys are hearing other things.
Hi, it's Abby Miller from Preferred One. I will say what I just saw now. So the 26th, I think, has to do with the test. You have to have a negative test to return to the United States starting January 26th. As far as the WHO and the vaccine passport, I'm not seeing anything about that being required. In fact, I'm seeing a lot of news stories that say it's not a good idea at this point.
Okay, and that's in line with what I found out. So thank you for that.
Hi, this is Heather Bouffard from Community Health Options up in Maine. I'm wondering if folks could comment on how they're distributing some of their communications and if they've done any webinars for their members. And if so, have you found that helpful? One of the challenges that we have, as I'm sure many of you have, is the amount of communications that are going out to our members. We have various messages that we want to get out, and we don't want to overwhelm our membership with communication. So looking for any tips or any feedback you might have.
This is Charles Perez from Community Care of Oklahoma. We've had the same issue with the communications. We're a small regional health plan in northeastern Oklahoma, and most of our membership is in northeast Oklahoma. Our strategy was to focus on communications through one specific channel on our website, and we supplement that with all of our customer service calls referring information related to COVID-19 vaccine and testing all through that website communication, so that way we have one central repository. And then we have some committees in the community here that meet to coordinate how we update that website with information as it's released from either the CDC or the federal government.
Great, thank you very much.
this is Cindy with Aspire Health Plan. We are also a one county Medicare Advantage plan. So our tactic has been to direct our members, and our customer service team uses the Monterey County Health Department website as the source of truth. We do update our website, but we always use the information that's there on the Monterey County. One of the things that we just did, we're in the process of, is doing a outbound voice broadcast, just letting people know that we still don't have the serum yet, but that we'll communicate with them via email, mail, because we are starting to get more calls to our customer service department. So we did just deploy this voice broadcast. But our approach has been just keep directing them to our county website where, you know, the vaccine is being distributed through them.
Great. Thank you. And when you say a voice broadcast, are you actually leaving messages on answering machines?
Yes. Otherwise known as a robocall.
Okay.
That's what we're doing. And we have a place for them to call back customer service. They can reach customer service and they can, you know, restate the, what we said in the broadcast, but that's what we're doing to just get the message out quickly to them that, you know, we recognize that, you know, they're hearing a lot of information and that they're 65 and older will be back, you know, will receive the vaccine, but at this point we still don't have any, and that we'll reach out to them as soon as we have the vaccine and or, you know, the community has it for distribution.
Thank you.
This is Lisa Kaysinger. I'm with Health Team Advantage in North Carolina. So we are a regional plan, 13 counties. In our member outreach so far, we connect with members on Facebook and we also do digital newsletters. We have a postcard right now at the printer that we're going to send our members. We have about 15,000 members across those counties. And in North Carolina, they've set up a state website where we are directing members to go to find out where they can get their shot, their local health department, that type of thing. So we're using that kind of avenue to reach out to members.
Hi, this is Catherine Soman from Metro Plus Health in New York City. So we're predominantly a Medicaid plan. The bulk of our over 600,000 members are some of the most vulnerable citizens of New York. One of the challenges we have about communicating right now is not the channels we would use. We have plenty of channels. For us, it's really the confusion around what should we be telling people. I mean, we're in a city where people were told you can get your vaccines, and then 2 days later, nope, we're out of supplies. People made appointments were being canceled. So there's a lot of confusion in the city, and I'm guessing that's true for a lot of the people on this phone. So I'm just wondering if anyone is facing what we're facing, which is we're putting out what we absolutely know is true, and we're sort of waiting to figure out how can we really give tailored messaging to people who should be going in to get their vaccinations, et cetera. So we're sort of waiting to hear, I think, to some extent, what the Biden administration is going to be telling us.
This is Greg again, Greg McCullough from Health Alliance Medical Plans. I would echo that sentiment. We're also using a digital postcard, if you will, via email regarding the vaccine to our members. However, it's fairly generic in the sense that, you know, we let our members know that, you know, it's going to be a few months before it's available to everyone, you know, that look for further communication from us and or from your provider to know when it's quote unquote your turn. So that is a bit of a challenge as well. We want to communicate to our members, but we can't direct them quite as specifically at this point as we'd like to. I think we're all in the same boat there. But to an earlier point, somebody mentioned webinars or something in order to get communication regarding the vaccine and COVID out. We had started doing that in our, what we call our benefit information events going into the AEP season. So we kind of had a segment on COVID to address those concerns a little bit earlier, although we were well into the pandemic earlier, meaning prior to the end of the year and before the vaccine was actually available. And we're also doing in some service areas, we're a regional health plan, but we're across multiple states. So we follow the guidance of that particular county, depending on the state that you're in. But in terms of the webinars, we're also doing some new member orientation meetings in February, where I plan to address additional information regarding COVID and surrounding the vaccine, and hopefully we'll have more information than we currently do in that time. It's about a month out, so we're hoping to get more specific information by then that we can kind of leak out and you know to our newer members and you know. With our health plan, word of mouth is quite a big thing. You know, we're not a large health plan, but our members, new and existing, tend to spread the word. So hopefully if we have some new information, we can get it out that way as well. And then that will follow up some more, with more digital and probably communications by mail.
This is Will from CCHP. I'd like to echo a lot of what we've already talked about. In terms of communication, what we're doing beyond the base communication of health education around the vaccines is really to communicate that there is a lot of confusion in the space, where to go for additional updates, and really what to sign up for in terms of notifications. We're really trying our best to mitigate the heavy call volume that's coming into our call center. And that is really overwhelming, not only our member services team, but also the call centers for our providers and facilities as well, which have all experienced, you know, a great deal of folks just calling in and trying to orient themselves to what's going on. So I'd say that just telling people that we don't know and we're trying to figure out, and this is how we will figure out what is going to happen, and giving them kind of a timeline for that is helping. It's not decreasing the calls by an order of magnitude, but it is helping to decrease the duration of call if we can point them to a place to constantly go to, because there is significant demand of probably around 2 or 3x what we typically experience at this time during a normal year.
Who else wants to share?
Hi, this is Sarah from Neighborhood. I'll just jump in here. I can echo what Teresa said in chat about being closely aligned with the public health department. We are definitely taking the lead of the Rhode Island Department of Health. We have about 200,000 members in the state. And like many who have mentioned before, our members are the most vulnerable folks in the state and in many of the cities that are having the highest rates of infection. And so we're just kind of taking their messages and putting them into our channels rather than create special messages so that, again, we don't overwhelm the community with all different types of information. We're just helping to kind of do broader reach and frequency in collaboration with the Department of Health, who their messaging strategy is to kind of is based on what they're calling the influencer, knowing that we have many parts of our population that don't trust the vaccine. It's how do we help people feel safe and will be mentally and emotionally ready to take the vaccine when it's available. So we have a pretty strong community-based outreach team that are well-known in our neighborhoods. And so they're gonna be part of that influencer strategy as safe people to talk to and ask questions of and help folks understand, you know, how the vaccines work, knowing that probably by the time most of our members are gonna get the shot, we'll be distributing some different vaccine at that point. And so we're really focusing our messaging on test often, treat early, and be ready when the vaccine is available. So with the new medications that are out that are showing that if I have symptoms and I get to my primary care and take the medications and I won't remember what it is, I know it begins with an M and it's a very long word, that it minimizes the symptoms. And so that's how we're, you know, working to not overwhelm our hospitals any more than they already are, and educating that if I can get to this medication early, then I will have less severe symptoms. Whereas before we were just telling people to stay home and stay away from others if you're having symptoms, and report to the hospital if you're getting, if you start to have severe issues. Now we're trying to teach people to get to their primary care doctor. And like everyone else, we're using those traditional channels of social media, web information, you know, outbound calls. We're looking at postcards to do mailings as members become eligible.
Thanks, Sarah.
This is Elizabeth again at IU Health Plans. Another thing that we're doing that I haven't heard mentioned is that we have a special banner at the top of our iuhealthplans.org website where we have the COVID information, and we can switch that out rather fast if there's new and changing information.
Hi, this is Anne Armeo from SumaCare in Akron, Ohio. Just a quick question for those who are communicating, whether it's, you know, through an email or through a mailer, are you always including a phone number and finding people are challenged? Of course, over time, more and more seniors have gone online or have email addresses, but I've certainly seen in our local news, they're interviewing folks who need to be able to get a text to get their vaccine, but they don't have, you know, that ability, or they need to go online and register and don't have that ability either. So I'm just curious how folks are dealing with that.
In Indiana, they have a couple different phone numbers they can use to call in if they don't have a website, or a lot of times they have somebody else do it for them if they do want to register by web. But there's the 211 number, and then there's another unique number that they can use.
Thank you.
This is Heather Bouffard calling again from Community Health Options. I'm curious, is there a particular text service that you're using?
Anybody have a texting platform they could share about?
This is Catherine Soman at MetroPlus Health. We have a phenomenal digital communications vendor. We use HealthCrowd, which is basically in the San Francisco area. Some of you who are on this call may know them. We will certainly enlist them when we get closer to understanding where we can drive people to go get their vaccines, but they are really a great partner and have helped us with many similar kinds of projects. And during COVID-19, it's really been extremely important for us to text our members. And we've been doing a lot more of that. So they've just been a wonderful partner to help us make sure that we reach them.
That's great. Maybe I would reach out and ask them if they had any references here in the Northeast. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.
This is Elizabeth from IU Health Plans again. I would caution people to list particular sites to go to, because based on what I experienced yesterday as a volunteer, I talked with the health director about this. And this particular site that I was helping at is going to change because they found that the response was bigger than the size of the facility. So they needed to change to another facility. And they said, once you change, then you're locked into the one that you changed to. He said they can happen that fast. So, you know, today here's the location. 2 days from now, it's another location.
Yeah, that's the challenge, really. It's a moving target during this time, which can be frustrating for the plans as well as their members. Other questions or best practices you'd like to share? I just noticed my colleague Dennis Boland is listening in on the call. Hi, Dennis. I'm glad you're on. Anything else you'd like to share or ask about? This is your chance. We have 57 people still on representing health plans from large to small across the country, all facing the same challenges with regard to informing members about vaccinations.
Hey, this is Todd McCullough with Medigold. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. We are a provider-sponsored health plan. We're owned by Mount Carmel Health System, which is a subsidiary owned by Trinity Health System nationally. So we got word last Thursday night late and then Friday that Mount Carmel had received 300 doses of the first vaccine for people age 85 and over. So that doesn't necessarily mean that we can tell our members they get them all, but we, and you know, we're cautious about how we tell people where to go and what to get. But we were able to use Mount Carmel's information and link it to our COVID resource site, resource page on our website, which we use primarily for our publications or for our notifications because things change so rapidly. Someone mentioned earlier cautioning about going to specific sites. We point people specifically to the CDC and the state of Ohio site for our Ohio plan, and the same thing in Idaho and Iowa. So we're very cautious about where we point people to because there's a ton of information. And so we connected the Mount Carmel Hospital system, health system information into our website, into our COVID section, and people could click on that link and it would then take them to the Mount Carmel system page where they can register and whatnot. We are doing some outreach to high-risk members in certain counties to let them know those things are available. We certainly can't reserve spots, but we can for them, just because they're a Medigold member, but we can, you know, guide them along the process and help them to sign up. And, you know, 300 doses go pretty quick. So, and that number changes from day to day to day. So we're keeping the link up. And anytime there's any current or new information released by CDC or the state of Ohio, we update that on our website and link that to that as well. But we do send some publications as well, or printed materials. We have a member newsletter that was going out, I believe this week, that has the information in it, but we're always pointing people back to our website via social posts and even through the printed materials we send, because, you know, people get a piece of paper in their hand and they make it law and they show up at a place with it and things have changed. So we're just careful about the printed stuff. We know it's valuable to get it in their hands, but we more so like to keep things as digital as we can because of the fluidity of everything.
That makes sense. As things change from day to day, digital is probably the best way to keep things current.
Hi, this is Mary Beth Wexler from Johns Hopkins Healthcare. I was wondering if any, like now that we're getting the happy COVAX data from Acumen for Medicare, do any plans have any communications planned about like for members who got their first dose, doing anything with the second dose or anything around kind of like individual members based on that data?
Catherine in New York City again. Yes, we have that planned, again, because many of our members are, you know, they speak other languages. Some of them have multiple comorbidities. They're lower income. So we will be wanting to follow up with anyone that we've identified as having their first dose to make sure that we outreach to them about their second, likely through a combination of texting, phone calls, maybe IVR messaging, as something that can be more nimble than mailing them something.
So this is Greg from Healthline's Medical Plans. How are you actually tracking your members that receive the first dose? Presumably the shot itself is not necessarily coming in the form of a claim to you. Is it the administration portion that helps you track it?
You know, I'm not sure of the exact answer to that. And I think that some of the complexities of this is exactly what you're raising, which is how will we know, depending upon where they go, who's picking up any of the costs. So it may be a challenge even to understand whether our members have been vaccinated, especially in the beginning. I think we're all hoping that once the new administration picks this up, that there may be a stronger plan in place that we can find out these things and implement them in our own planning. But at least on our end, it's I think what I'm hearing from other people here is we're trying to tell people what we absolutely know is true, send them to the sites that we trust, whether it's the CDC or the New York State Department of Health or anything else, and try to just keep them informed about whatever we think is still valid. It's pretty difficult right now to predict what we should be telling them even tomorrow.
Yeah, so just to follow up on that, so like I said, on our end, I know that we are covering any vaccination administration portion, so not the vaccine itself, that's covered by the government, but if there is a, you know, if they're in an office or they're in a place where the billing for the actual administration or venipuncture of the vaccine can be billed, then we are prepared to pick up that, but I don't know if that even applies to all situations, especially if you're going to county health department or something. I'm not even sure that.
Yeah, I mean, another challenge could be if a member goes into an urgent care center that's not a participating urgent care center in our network, for example. They should not be charged for the vaccine. But what happens if the urgent care center charges them for an ineffective visit? So these are the kinds of things that will, I think, and obviously not, that's not my area of expertise, but in our plan, we're working on all of those things, to just try to make sure that we can keep this a no-cost vaccination program for our members. And there are clearly some ways where some charges may end up getting accrued, and we don't want that.
Yeah. And Catherine, that's a great point. Excellent point you just bring up. I'm actually looking to get an answer within, Health Alliance right now as to whether we're covering that admin cost in or out of network, regardless of plan type, meaning HMO versus POS, et cetera. So that is actually something that we're still figuring out on our end. Presumably the answer is there. I haven't gotten the answer yet, and that's what I'm looking for. So that would be a bit helpful, but like I had mentioned, it sounds like you're confirming that's not a 100% reliable way to track all the injections that are occurring within.
Yeah, I think there are some built-in challenges in this, especially for those people who work on the payer end of it.
Catherine, this is Will. We thought originally that we would be able to track first dose and second dose through the regular claims process. And In San Francisco, that is not going to be the case. I spoke with quite a number of volunteers who were doing vaccinations earlier this week. And while they are handing out forms for people to fill out with insurance information, they are encouraging people just to leave them blank for expediency's sake. So we have no idea whether people are getting the vaccine, even if they make an appointment. We don't know what what fallout that there's going to be from a communication standpoint as a result.
Right. I know. Yeah, it's definitely, there are a lot of challenges ahead for us. Now, Will, in your presentation, was that addressed at all? Did you raise that?
Yeah, it's one of the challenges. I mean, I have a slide dedicated to challenges. I mean, we've talked about the lack of user tracking that we will have in this process, but also, bad actors, misinformation, and other kind of things that we are sure will pop up in every kind of major activity that we've done in terms of outreach over the last decade or two. Mm-hmm. It's an unfortunate consequence that there is fraudulent behavior, okay, that where people, pretend to be us or pretend to be a provider and solicit our members, which creates not only confusion, but may have health consequences as well. So there's a slide dedicated to unknowns and challenges that we'll have.
Great. I am looking forward to seeing that deck.
Yeah, I think it's been linked already on the chat.
This is Elizabeth from IU Health Plans. When I worked the registration as a volunteer yesterday, you had to put in either their commercial insurance, Medicare, or no insurance. So if they're a commercial member and you put in their insurance, I can see how you could track the first dose in if they got the second dose. What we saw was the complication for the people who had Medicare. Like I said, if they didn't have their Medicare card, you could put in their insurance information and yes, then the insurance company would see it. But then there was also an option, and we don't know across the state how people are doing this. If you put it in as no insurance and it was paid for through a grant, then nobody's going to see if they got their first shot or their second shot except the state in their database. So I'm not sure how that's going to happen, but in Indiana, it seems like that's the source of truth. Who got their second vaccine and who did not is that state database. And I don't think that the insurance plans are going to have accurate information.
I would recommend that people do check with their Department of Health how the vaccines are getting reported into, whether it's their general vaccine registry or other database. In Washington, they have allowed, our Department of Health is allowing plans to have access to our vaccine registry to track first and second doses. I know that's not the case in every state, but if you have not checked with your Department of Health about access to your vaccine registry, I would recommend that you do that.
Yeah, this is Andy from Health New England, Massachusetts. We've just begun discussions with Department of Public Health to link up with the state-run vaccination registry.
Thank you. We have about 5 minutes left. I want to make sure folks either chat your comment or question or go off mute. Make the most of it.
This is Ann Armeo again at SumaCare in Akron. I think what I'm hearing, I just want to be sure if anyone wants to jump in, especially those who've been talking, as you work with your health system owner, you know, we're mostly provider-owned plans owned by a health system. Are you finding ways to collaborate as you communicate, even if they have limited doses of vaccine, to get people signed up and aware and in there so that you could notify them in the future when vaccines are available? Have you had any experience with this? Does that create any concerns with folks because they don't have the vac, you know, it is, as all of us have acknowledged, there's limited doses right now. Hopefully eventually there'll be more. Just curious how that's working from an integrated standpoint.
This is Charles from Community Care. I can share our experience. So we actually are owned by two different provider systems and they share risk with our health plan. So we have two different owners operating under two different schedules for distribution of vaccines. And so what we did to help coordinate was we allowed the health systems themselves to do the notification of when vaccines were available. And so our message has been through our website and our member services and outreach attempts to our members who have questions about receiving the vaccine to all coordinate with their primary care physician or through the health system as the access channel for receiving the vaccine. That way they can get real-time information about when vaccines were made available and when they could schedule their appointments. For our system, the distribution was at random in some cases, and the identifiers for who was to be eligible to receive a vaccine were not the same across the two different health systems, as you can imagine. So it's been a very mixed message when you're speaking to one health system versus the other. And so in order to help coordinate the message in a clear direction, we allow our members to get all of the information directly from the health system.
Thank you.
That's helpful. So as we wrap up, I want to give you folks another opportunity to ask any lingering questions. But while folks are thinking about that, I want to remind you about the discussion forum and how ideal it is, especially with the rapidly changing landscape regarding COVID vaccinations. Use the discussion forum to initiate additional conversation and Q&A. As you all know, with the notifications into your email box, you can really respond in a very real time and, you know, get your questions answered and get that sharing going. You can also attach for other people's benefit, any communication, anything you're particularly pleased with or is effective in the way of communications, and you can share those by attaching that in the discussion forum thread. So keep that in mind as we wrap up this call, that you can continue the conversation as soon as you get off the phone. If something comes to mind, just post something there. Anything else? And a reminder that if you are interested, reach out to Will. He's open to creating an ad hoc work group if you all are interested. And I'll stay plugged in closely with Will. If you scroll up in the chat box, you'll see Will's email address. If you want to stay apprised of additional activity, we will be sharing that at the same time. So we'll stay linked and we'll stay in communication with you if we schedule additional get-togethers. So, Will?
Thank you, Jennifer.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining, and stay safe and well, and we'll wrap up for now. Thank you so much.
Thank you for hosting us.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.